spin. Run, 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 but you sure can't hurt. An eye for an eye, a tooth for a tooth. Vote for me and I'll set you free. Rap on, brother, rap on.
Hey, good afternoon, Winter Park, and welcome back to another edition of Punkonomics, broadcasting live from WPRK, Winter Park, Florida, the voice of Rollins College, and the best in basement radio. My name is Jesse Velez, I am the co-host, and sitting right next to me is Dr. Benjamin Balick and Jose, and we are going to have a couple guests today, but before we even proceed, just to let you know that all the comments, opinions stated here today are solely ours and not of those of WPRK or Rollins College staff, employees, volunteers, and whoever else hangs out in this place. Anyway, welcome to Punkonomics.
Yeah, anybody that, you know, we don't want to force ourselves on anybody, that's for sure. Well, yeah, so we're quite excited. We have a guest. I'm not entirely sure because I think one guest for sure. That's what I'm counting on, and I'm very we're looking forward to it very much. He's going to come a little bit later because it's all part of the Peace Film Festival that goes on in town, this time also downtown, not just on campus. I will give this information later a couple of times as we spend time with this filmmaker. It's going to be Kyoko Yokoma, and she directed a film called Between Allah and Me and Everybody Else. And it's, well, it touches on a whole lot of things that some people might consider not really related to economics, but those people will be, of course, utterly wrong. We're here, so Jose Galvez is with us.
Hello.
As usual, you know, he's kind of our usual guest, you know, a child prodigy or something.
Child prodigy.
Yeah,
wow.
No, it's tickled.
I'd rather be guest.
He's still young enough not to take it as a compliment, you know what I mean?
I don't know what you mean by that.
Well, you know, it's exciting for us in a sense, right? Are we like distorting that we are recording because we are catching up? You know, we're all extremely extra busy more than before. You know, poor Jesse is struggling through a demanding graduate program. Well, it's kind of what you, they do.
Grad school is rough.
Grad school's rough.
I have a theory. And that is that most people who are in psych, you know, healthcare, that kind of stuff, after they get through their master's or their doctorate, they need therapy.
They only need therapy.
I think it's on purpose. Right. Well, you're not right. I mean, I know that traditional psych education, part of it is that you do get therapy, which makes sense so that you just, you know, you see mm-hmm. how it works, right, on yourself. Otherwise, you'd really not. In a sense, not have any applied knowledge of what you're doing.
It's kind of like an economist going but you know, voluntarily poor on grad school, right? And that teaches about economics.
talking about nut cases, since we got a little bit of time before our guests show off, talking about crazy
perfectly
people.
You are qualified to discuss that here.
Yes. Actually, I'm qualified to talk about that.
Okay.
Authentically nutters.
Yeah, exactly. you know, here we go again. 10 people dead in Portland. And,
not
you know,
too far from here too. I mean,
were
you driving on
or something, right?
Like also another, like it's, whoa.
But you know, it's kind of like, I basically just kind of turned it off, because, it's already started to be watered down. You know, the politicians are going like, well, a good example is the sheriff over there. You know, they actually said, hey, well, what's your opinion? You know, I mean, is it time to start looking at certain things, stuff like that? Just, oh, I don't get into the politics of it. I'm just doing an investigation.
I thought it was time to get into it probably, what,
30 years ago? Exactly.
40 years
exactly.
ago?
Exactly. And, you know, I mean, we have to respect the right gun owners and all that kind of stuff, their rights,
of course.
Whatever. But, you know, when are we going to start educating people on the proper use of guns and also looking into putting a little bit more restrictions because it's still too easy to get a gun.
Well, you know who had a really great statement on the topic, I believe? Stephen Colbert, now that he has his new job
as
a host.
Right.
And he basically said what we basically should not do is to pretend that nothing is going on.
Right.
And continue pretending that we can just basically ignore the issue, shut it off, because the more, that's kind of what we have been doing so far, pretending that there is not a problem.
Would you mind telling me an issue that we deal with differently?
That's a good point.
You see what I'm saying?
One of
right?
the ones that really matter type of deal.
Right.
Yeah, I agree.
It's actually a good broad example of our, you know, complete political failure here in gun control. I mean, there are different opinions, and
right.
actually you guys know already, or at least you know from
yeah.
your shows, that I'm kind of funny that way, right?
Mm-hmm.
But it's a great example of precisely nobody's sitting down and saying, okay, we got gun rights,
okay.
we have culture.
I have an example
you know,
of one that doesn't work that way. And I think it's a good thing that it doesn't work that way. Gay rights. Right. If you think about it, marriage has become legalized. Today, I read in the news that there is a pope, I believe, in Poland or Belgium. I can't recall exactly, but there is a priest there that's coming out gay, and obviously the Vatican is going
crazy,
completely scandalized over it.
Yeah.
But if you think about it,
some
advancement and some progress, you would say, has been done through that agenda.
Yeah. So you know why they freak out?
Yeah.
Because they're afraid that one that's coming out of the closet is going to come out with a big list of a whole bunch of others that need to come out of the closet.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, it's tricky
please.
Business. You know, I mean, I know that a lot of people, there's this, on the one hand, there's, if we're going to talk about the Papa, as a flaming atheist who sends his daughter to the Catholic school. Yay! you know, I have much respect.
I
don't have to have.
School, eh?
I know. And you were in my classes and kicked butt and now we hired you. So there's that. It's like legacy, man. I'm feeling all right. But seriously. People are arguing about him, right? I mean, on the one hand, you have the people who have gotten their proverbial panties in a knot over the fact that the guy is pretty progressive, right?
Yes.
But he's the Pope. I mean, the Catholic Church doesn't change its mind in century usually.
but he's got a hotline with God, according to
right.
the Bible.
Yeah.
So
well, maybe they use AT&T.
Maybe.
But yeah,
I wonder how the signal on that one.
But that too, the whole argument
of
is he the second coming that will liberate and he can't exactly. He has to tread gently, whatever his beliefs. And he's of course a deeply religious man, I assume. Right?
I got the solution behind that to find out if you know, just do the same thing they used to do in Salem, dunk them in water. You know,
if he dies, he was innocent.
Yeah,
right?
Exactly.
If he didn't die, he's guilty. Therefore, we have to kill him.
Exactly.
You gotta love them. Only Monty Python do justice to the medieval logic.
Well, a couple of years, I wrote an econ paper who actually describes kind of in a game theoretical setup. The whole idea of belief or disbelief, right? And is the present value of life if there is an afterlife, right?
Right.
If the present value of life, if there is not an afterlife,
right?
And you can actually...
It's Pascal's wager, right?
Enlightenment
philosopher Pascal's wager, right? I mean, okay, I don't think there's a God, but if
just
I'm
case,
wrong,
at least I
it
was
could
a
get
good
real
person,
iffy,
right?
Things
or
could
not.
Get gear-shaped very fast if I'm wrong.
Well, here's
the slipper is low for you.
Now, here's something that kind of taught me, or at least I validified my views on religion. And it happened recently... walking through UCF.
Yeah.
Okay. I'm coming out of the student council, walk in, and you know, everybody's got the little tent and the whole bit, you know, trying to push world peace and all these other agendas. Mm-hmm. And all of a sudden I get approached by this person and he says, how much currency do you have, in heaven? And I'm going like, look at him. I'm going like, what? He says, how much currency, you have in heaven to get into heaven? And I said, well, I don't know. I think my credit is bad, but I said, I don't have enough. I'm sure I don't have any currency to get in heaven, but I got plenty of credit in hell.
Nice.
Yeah,
hell,
he ran away from me, but.
Hell is a complicated topic. We accept it. I mean, because, well, now we live in the postmodern era at the very least. So, you know, people are confusing theology, scripture, Hollywood cartoon, you know, movies and Disney cartoons. It's all kind of meshed up together. Concept of hell is kind of very late in theology,
right.
actually, and many religious people, and I'm not talking about the slightly more enlightened Eastern religions, But even the Judeo-Christian Muslim tradition, this argument about exactly is there even a hell, you know?
Yeah.
It's okay. But anyway, okay, so yeah, let's go. Okay, we did that a little bit. We might do it again. You know how it is. But what about the shooting, the gun problem? I got to say it. Let me say this. There are really funky meme out there that every time it comes out again, whenever we have a shooting, and people always like to say, oh, look at Switzerland. Everybody's heavily armed because they have a kind of a reserve army, kind of mandatory military service. So basically everybody, has to keep their kit, you know, their basic military service kit at home.
Right.
In case they're invaded by,
It has happened in history.
Right. But when you think about it, you know, they basically gone through generations.
Switzerland.
Okay. But think about it. They've gone through generations. Okay. So for them to have a gun at home or in their pocket or wherever it is that they're at, it's almost like having a second penis.
No, wait a second. Wait a second.
You know,
gun violence in Switzerland is second only to the United States. Those meme you see about Switzerland are BS.
So there is a lot of gun violence.
Tremendously. Crime rates are low in Switzerland, but crime is not the main way people die from firearms.
Right.
Overwhelmingly, these are suicides and, you know, domestic violence and accidents. So again, in fact, it's that meme is a very strong argument for the anti-gun position, because here is a country that's totally stable, doesn't have any kind of strange heritage. You know, how stable is it? They're stable to the point. Sorry, my Swiss friends. You know, they're so stable, they're boring, right?
They make great IKEA.
Well,
We're consistent citizens.
Yeah, all these Scandinavians look alike, only they're not Scandinavian. It's fun. Usually you hear that sort of thing about, you know, either, you know, people from the Orient or people from Africa, from
Italy. Yeah, in Latin America, man.
But yeah, but to some people, all these, you know, tall, blonde people also look alike. Hey. Sometimes to me too, by the way, but not that I don't love. Don't get me wrong.
I mean, as a counter example to that country also, I think a couple of weeks ago, John Oliver did something on Australia, no? And how Australia has a heavy gun regulation.
Yeah.
Right? They were able to actually decrease the crime. They were able to decrease this type of violent outbursts. Yeah. And
well, I mean, you know, it's time to try something.
Yeah. It's not easy. That's right. That's it. But the thing is, we can't get, like, with all the other policies, with perhaps the exception that I think the gay rights thing was almost serendipitous, right? It's kind of,
it came out, a good
outcome came from a very dysfunctional system. So it happens rarely.
But why did it happen?
I think it is
soon or something. I don't get out much.
She knows.
She's an expert.
But think about it. You know, the issues change here when it affects the politicians directly. Gay rights, that kind of stuff. The moment their kids came out, you know, you don't hear about the kids of the politicians getting shot. And if they do, it's like, what, 0.0000%?
And we discussed it, I think, several times also, the notion that, I mean, some of my gay friends are a little bit kind of snickery and skeptical about it. Sure, I mean, you know, frankly, who isn't for marriage equality? We can talk about it. I mean, there's a lot of myth here, too.
Right.
People think of the church didn't, you know, mix in this stuff until much later in history. In fact, it's,
You would think they would welcome that, though.
Here it's a matter of, I mean, sure, you'd welcome it. The problem is that the primary issue of gay people in America are, you know, the horrendous rates of teen suicide, the homelessness.
Bullying, gay kids and
LGBT kids are way overrepresented in homeless, abused, you know.
Yeah.
No, that isn't helping them at all. It's irrelevant to them. And there's some criticism from the more radical queer community that I kind of understand. And again, this is in no way against, that's not enough. You know, don't now that your kids are safe, don't abandon them.
But we have a habit of doing that. You know, once, you know, the kids of certain people are saved, then it just goes back to same old stuff. Complacent, you know, being real complacent, you know.
Yeah, care about the poor gay kids, for example. Yeah. How about them, right? I mean, so let's see. Now, all that money that was poured into marriage equality, hopefully some of it's left. Though, of course, we're a bit skeptical. No, problem solved. Thank you very much. Who cares about the kids on the street?
Right.
And you'd think you'd have some more solidarity in that community. I'm still hopeful, you know. I'm not saying it's good.
I think it's from the amount of hatred I saw, say, for example, in Guatemala, right, incredibly machista country, right, and the amount of bullying, this is a step in the I'm going to fail to be the optimist here.
No, right? In no way am I saying, I mean, there's way too much
in the progressive circle, right, and there needs to be more done, you know, but you've got to start somewhere, right? And it seems that in topics like gun control or even mental health issues, right, I don't know which one of the two will help us solve the problem in a better way. But if you think of the problem of gun control, at least there we haven't done even taken the first step, right? There is not even a slightless talk.
Right, and there's no real discussion about the issues, unfortunately, too, which is always the problem. I mean, we could maybe come to some kind of rational outcome here.
Maybe we can find some compromise and do both, right?
It's also impracticality. I mean, there's a lot of symbolism here. I mean, how do you make them disappear? I think I said it on the show and we've many times already discussed it, right? I mean, if there was a magic red button I could press right now that would make all firearms in America disappear, police too, by the way, but I would press that button despite the fact that mine will disappear too. Too bad. That's a hobby that I'll have to give up.
Right.
Learn to use the crossbow and the katana more effectively, right? is that our guest? I think I see our guest through the dark window. Yeah. Wonderful. It's a little bit of a maze. It is in the basement, in case people think that it's just a, right? We are in a basement.
Hi.
Hello.
Hello.
Wonderful. We were just having a discussion, but the rest of it, we're on the air, so we can say hello.
Yep.
Anyway, this show is kind of just a chaotic chat, and we look very forward to hearing you.
We're very informal here, so.
So you know who I am. Yes. You didn't even ask my name.
That's absolutely right. And we were also, they told us that you would probably be looking for us through the underground maze.
A lot, yes.
But why don't you give a brief presentation for people who just tuned in?
Right. I mean, I posted about it. Yes. We said a few words, just the title and your name, but maybe let's just jump right into it and tell us about it. I saw the preview. It's on the punkonomics.org. Anybody want to see when it's showing today at 4:30 and
fascinating
tomorrow?
Fascinating trailer. I read the article.
It's a topic I've been interested in.
Thank you very much.
Very cool.
For a long time, so very interesting to learn about it.
So we should introduce ourselves.
Yes.
All right, we should, right?
Yeah, we should.
So this is Jesse Velez, is ex-student and now in grad school here. And this is a guy who used to be my student in undergrad, and not
Jose.
Just mine.
Uh-huh.
And then he went to graduate school. And then we hired him as a tutor this year. So
kind of
cool.
And that's Dr. Balak.
I'm Benny Balak. I work here in the econ department. But I'm a funny economist, very broadly interested economist.
Yeah.
I'm trained as an economist, but then I do a lot of other things too, including looking at issues of cultural relativity and things like that, which are so fascinating, especially in the context. So
well,
that's us.
Nice meeting you.
And
yeah. Well, my name is Kyoko Yokoma. I'm originally from Japan, but I live in Toronto area.
Okay.
And I'm here in Florida today to present my film at the Global Peace Film Festival. The title of the film is Between Allah and Me. Parenthesis and everyone else. It's about four practicing Muslim women living in Toronto area. I follow them as they experience the change of their practice about their dress code, which means start wearing the hijab, this headscarf of the Muslim women, or decided to take it off. So it portrays their experience, what they go through, the different meanings and reasoning mm-hmm. of doing it and a different type of reactions that they get.
Okay.
So yeah. That's the whole film about.
I mean, it's a rich thing because of the context of it, of course, with Islam being, I don't know, controversial is not the right word, under attack, mostly.
Islamophobia.
Right, phobia, right, probably phobia, better, right? Yeah, that's probably a little bit too polite, phobia, because it implies a kind of a condition that you have no control over instead of just a hateful attitude. But listen, I mean, I'll just jump to the big question. And I remember when I was actually living in France back in the 80s.
Right.
And it was kind of the beginning, at least that I noticed, where, you know, you had immigrants that came from traditionally Muslim countries,
mm-hmm.
Ex-colonies, of course, mostly, and their parents were rather secular. And the younger generation rediscovered the hijab.
Right.
And it seems to me, again, much younger back then, perhaps, it's almost it was an act. It reminded me of the punk days, in a sense of something to shock your parents with, something to as a young person to say, no, I will not follow the rules. I will do it differently.
Yeah.
So while we often see these things as a symbol of women's subjugation, it kind of already I thought, wait a minute, it's a bit
that's
more complicated.
That's a very
than that.
Well simplified. Yeah. Yes. Yeah. It's a lot more complicated than that, I think.
Yeah. So. I mean, ever since I've had the possibility of working, meeting, interacting with extremely independent, powerful women wearing hijabs, so I'm completely cured of that problem.
Well, some of the subjects I followed, actually, they started wearing it against all the old family members.
Mm.
So, and then also the vice versa. You can ask me a question otherwise. It's so hard to explain the broad picture
right,
of it.
Right, it's a huge phenomenon. Mm-hmm.
And then Toronto being such a town of immigrants and the diversity, I also find that I talk to the people, non-Muslim people, and I hear that, you choose to live in Canada, so you shouldn't bring that old habit or tradition. There is this practice here. Mm-hmm. And I said, well, many of them are born here. And then, more Canadian than yourself.
Right. Classic, right?
So, that doesn't really apply. And then somehow there's a general misunderstanding that they are from other countries. Of course, there some of them are, but
even a white male. Actually, I was just there with Charlotte. Some person, a lot of people are looking for stuff out there just before the show, and a very nice lady. Though no way, after I tell her where to go, she's like, "Where are you from?" I'm like, "I'm from here." But you have an accent. I guess I wasn't born here, surely.
Yeah.
But
and a big some part I quite don't understand, but the part I really understand is that the hijab is the symbol of modesty.
Mm.
So when you see the media and then billboard, all of all the sexuality exposed, and I'm not in that, and I don't want to go to club and get drugged and do all those things.
Right.
I'm different type of girl. So that manifests, and then it's actually the protection. So if you're wearing that, you don't get flattered. You don't get, you're kind of like, you're giving a message, transmitting a message that don't mess around with me.
Yeah.
So
there are many different, and then and one of the women I followed is that she was in mid, 50s. And she's from former Soviet Union. And then she grew up in a place that religion is totally banned. And then they immigrated to Canada. And then, oh, my God, I didn't know anything about my religion. So starting following. Oh, now I can follow it. So this is a very different.
Right. I mean, everything is embedded also in these.
Mm-hmm.
in difficult times. I don't want to go into an angry rant here about the attitudes towards Islam and these assumptions that educated, nice people are saying in polite society about Muslims that really almost no other demographic would tolerate, or not that they're tolerating, but others would tolerate. Mm-hmm. People spoke like that about another ethnicity or religion, there would be a big outcry. But people say, you know, Islam is violent, women are all subjugated in Islam. My wife's a response to that when we joked, when I got the word that you will be the one coming to our show, and she immediately jokingly said, like, yeah, well, if I get the equal pay to men, you know, in the Western world, I'd be, maybe then I'll work a job, whatever.
So tell us a little bit more about the film.
Well, there are four women I followed, who actually came forward, when I advertised the kind of film I'm trying to make, and let me follow their process of changing their, outfit.
Okay.
So, what I wanted to show is that it's complicated. That's the message. Mm-hmm. That's the basic message, because everyone has different opinion, different meaning, different reasoning for wearing hijab or not wearing hijab. And there's no one set of answer, no one set of meaning. I want to introduce that because the media, it's so oversimplified, and sometimes like a debate, like fierce debate between pro hijab and non, calling the pro.
Mostly beside the point.
Right. Just divide, and then, you know, let them fight, and then that was the picture I was seeing here. So I wanted to kind of challenge that mentality by showing a lot more diversity.
Okay.
And complication, and it's fascinating. yeah.
And all four of them live in Toronto?
Yes, in the greater Toronto area. We call it GTA.
Okay.
Because somehow, well, except one temporarily at that time, three of them are living in like a suburb of Toronto. So there are, Toronto is such an, mosaic, type of the city that many of the Muslim women, the communities are in the suburban area. Mm-hmm. So I would say, but it is Toronto, right. Toronto women.
And how many people did you have helping you shooting the film? I mean, I know there's another complexity to just the story. Tell us a little bit about that.
The person. Well, this is why I made this whole film with just a grant.
Okay.
I filmed some of them, and then I filmed with a cinematographer and of course the sound person. So practically three of us. Mm. And part of it I did everything by myself. So you kind of noticed it.
but the
cinematographer and the main cinematographer and then sound person are women. I wanted to have a women crew. So.
Oh, yeah, that's the perfect segue. Yeah. At some point I was mentioning when we sat here saying like, hey, you know, look at us, three guys.
Yeah.
They may.
Talking about a issue with important feminist content. But is that really a problem? Sometimes it's perceived as such. Yeah. I really don't think it
we were talking about how like at some point I used to teach a course on gender in the economy in a Colorado university, and people got weirded out that it was a guy teaching a gender related class, right? Mm. It's like, hey, I have a gender too. I don't care about these gods and these things.
We all have a feminine side, right?
We all have a.
It's in our interest.
It's in our interest.
Like,
yeah.
The idea, but I thought they would be more comfortable.
Yes, that's
right.
True.
Right.
That is an excellent
they
point.
They may
right.
be able to
right.
tell me
more of
otherwise.
Their story.
Yeah.
So it's kind of what Ben is saying, right? It's in your own interest to sometimes appeal.
Well, to some extent, this is an opportunity for the privileged people, white, male, what have you, to to find themselves in a position where you have to keep your head down a little bit for a change. You have to make that extra little effort to gain the trust, because a priori, just looking at you, not so much. That's perfectly understandable.
I think maybe I could be wrong, but me being non-Muslim, non-Western person, is kind of like I don't carry any... she might be prejudiced for either way. So
that
I'm
is an
quite flat, you know. And Asian, being a Japanese, we don't have experience of fighting with Muslim or the historically, you know, centuries back. Europe has that, but we don't. And I never had the either positive or negative opinion about.
I have a question in regards to that, actually. Like, what actually was the, besides the whole media hype about women who wear this type of clothing, and do you have a friend that you saw at some point in a particular problem? What was kind of your initial motivation to get into this topic?
Well, that's why, right? I mean, Japanese one,
why? How did you get interested in it? I guess is what I'm asking.
Well, it's a simple answer. I used to live in Turkey.
Yes.
And my husband is Turkish.
Oh, okay.
And at that time, it was the late 90s. And now it's a very different situation because the ruling party in Turkey is more religious oriented. But at that time, Turkey is such a secular, you know, protecting the secular regime and the women in wearing hijab, if it's covered, were not allowed to go to get into any, enter any publicly funded place like government office or in universities, and there was always almost physical crush between the police and then students, female students, and I was just perplexing for me. What the big deal about the you know, the piece of cloth on your head, and why it's so such a big deal? And that's how what I got interested in, because I didn't have any background for myself. So that's when I started investigating or wanted to make a film about it. And then somehow I made it after moving to Canada, because it's a different situation in Canada, because it's Turkey, they have their own, it's a one country, they have their one history, one background. But in Canada, people are from different part of the world. And many people escape, like Iranian people escape from the very religious regime. Some others are just left the wars, but they didn't necessarily want to change their the practice. And then they're the second and the third generation. It's a different story. So it's a lot more complicated. But that diversity is not understood very well. So,
I mean, look at France, by the way. You know, again, a country I know well. That's my wife. My wife's from there. they banned it in public schools.
Yes.
And there was much argument about, wait a minute, why can't the girls wear a hijab in school? Remember, for listeners, we're talking about the light scarf. We're not talking about the burqa or that you can't, you know, that really completely isolates. But you can wear a cross, a chain with a cross in public schools in France, right? Or so they say. Oh, that's small. Now it's getting precise.
It's a double standard.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. And the excuse, I mean, the overwhelming excuse is typically that this is not really a choice. This is, it's the old argument of cultural diversity. It's, you know, cultural relativism. Sorry. Is it true that despite my wife's snide remark about that equality hasn't arrived to the West either yet, are there a lot of women being in a bad position overall in the Muslim world? Maybe a little bit more now than than in other places. I mean, we can't say now it's absolutely, there's no issue of women's rights in the Muslim world. Most religions are not particularly good on that, by the way. Yes. That was an understatement. But.
That's the complication about it. Right. It is. There is a part. I mean, the family or male.
Right.
But at the same time, in your trailer, there was one of the women presented when I watched the trailer who talks a lot about it, a little bit about the fact that she starts wearing it, but her mom is religious. Religious.
Right.
Her dad is not.
Yeah.
Right. Right?
Yeah,
and people tend to associate this aspect of...
Right, that also kind of...
made me think about the complexities behind the problem, right? Because, usually people associate it with the way patriarchy, right, gets involved in religion, right? And in this particular case, is this girl actually trying to bring back her mom, right? And her mom's tradition and ways of looking at the world, not her dad.
And this father is not being
impositive or anything like that, right?
Yeah. So again, the cynic, or I don't know, I like to, it's a teacher's job, it's what I do for a living, right? So I like to be the devil's advocate. You know, you have to be, right? But one could say, well, here you go, you see, the guy is secular. Therefore, he's tolerant. Yeah. If it was the other way around, would it be the same?
What I found is that it's not really male or female, but the community, the value of the community they belong to dictates. And they have the power of, and the families, because it's a pressure from the community and your family really than actually what it says in the Quran. That's the kind of feeling in general.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
Yeah.
And of course, the scriptures get interpreted. Mm-hmm. That's another thing that always drives me nuts, this notion that they don't. It's all about the interpretation.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Mm-hmm. Any person who knows religion well knows that, frankly.
Yeah.
But yeah, you know, in some sense, I'm itching to ask you to tell us those stories, and then maybe I understand that you maybe want to wait to see the movie.
So I'll let you
decide. But the question was, do you have one of those ladies who have put on the hijab because of the pressure? They don't want to, but they're gonna because of that communal pressure that they're under?
All of my subjects change. Well, actually, one being actually the one of the Syrian woman, she's not taking it off, but she had taken off before, but she didn't change in the film, actually. I'm sorry, what was the question again?
The case of the caricature case, you know, probably the mainstream media case, right? The woman that would like to be free in the West,
right.
And she
all of my women, they follow their own will, despite the pressures.
Mm.
So, but there's, I mean, you see that there are some people who are forced and they are following, but it's pretty much, the studies, academic studies indicate that in North America, majority of the women wearing hijabs or not wearing hijabs, that's their own choice. But it's a different story in a different country. I mean, other countries, of course. It's always a pressure. But mostly they pursue what they believe in.
No, and I think, I mean, one of the things is we should criticize everything, right? But one of the problems I have with this argument, hence that when I raise the fact that there is a real issue of women's rights in significant parts of the Muslim world, and in some parts, no, like famously Indonesia, right? It's a rather relatively very gender equal place. It's Muslim. It's 250 million people. They have their own reading of the Quran, a little bit different. But this the preachiness of the West, for lack of a better, on so many issues, including this kind of, oh, our cultural superiority is very grating, I think.
Yeah, going back to the colonialism that I think when the major contact between West and then the Middle East or the Muslim world in recent history is around the time of the end of the Ottoman Empire. Mm. Right, and then they broke up. They wanted to occupy them, so that was the propaganda. We have to liberate the women by controlling them. Mm. So that was a big part of it in the Western side.
Were they very free in the West at that point, right?
Or in some sense today. I mean, we've conjured an image of this poor little Muslim girl that wants to be Western. What is it to be Western? To watch these horrible, demeaning television shows, to be sexually, pre-sexualized in elementary school in order to be preyed on by commercial interests. The famous, we take away your self-esteem and then we sell it to you bit by bit.
Yeah, it's true. I went to, at the early stage of my research, I went to Arizona. There was a conference among the Muslim social work or something about, and in a Muslim conference, but there are some Christian people attending the conference, and then the young Muslim, very practicing, very religious young Muslim people are presenting, and then the Christian ladies said, "Oh, you are like models of a young."
Right.
Young people, because they're so strict in morals standard. So they don't do drug, they don't do alcohol, they don't,
and
engage in sexual conduct before getting married. So it's regular. Right.
So that's funny, because the statistics in America is the highest rate of teen pregnancy in the United States are people who wear a purity ring and promise not to have sex before marriage.
Yeah.
Oh.
Because they do. Okay. Guess what? Yeah. They're humans.
Yeah. So.
Abstinence is the worst form of birth control. It actually is inverse.
Well, I had a friend who had a really awesome t-shirt that had a Virgin Mary that said abstinence, 99.999% effective, right? Holding baby Jesus in her hands.
Right.
It didn't work for that.
But, and yes, again, I mean, if anybody feels culturally superior about that, and certainly about Christianity, I recommend they watch that very difficult documentary to watch, Jesus Camp.
Oh yes.
I've seen it when it came out, and I could. Uh-huh. My wife's still unable to see it. I could get her to see it 5 minutes. She can't stand it anymore. It's child abuse. It's an hour and a half of watching deep mental child abuse. Mm-hmm. Who am I to judge now? Right? Wait. Whoops. Uh-oh, right? I just failed the test of myself. Why am I judging? This is maybe really, are we, what time? Because I want to launch a whole, I'm excited.
We're 10 minutes away.
We're good. Because we have to do the top of the hour thing, and we're very disorganized and such.
Well,
I am. So.
We are all brainwashed, one way or the other.
But there's degrees.
I agree. I think that everybody has their own narrative, correct? But at the same time, how much do you let that narrative to be positive on other narratives, right? And that they're not willing. And I think that to some extent, a lot of people with respect to Muslim women's clothing actually have their own narrative of what are they supposed to do. And they want to impose on this woman a different narrative, and they should be more careful, no? Because they have the right. I think it's actually not respecting their right to not allow them their own narrative. And hey, I want to dress in a particular way, or I want to reflect I have certain types of values.
Though to some point, it might, again, to be the devil's advocate, is there a continuum, right? Are there the degrees? So if I conjured up, and now I'll have nightmares again, the Jesus Camp film, I think it's 2006, IMDb, right? There's one of the most shocking scenes I find is when these elementary school age children are being trained with regard to abortion. Right? Now, put aside what we think about it, alright? It's not relevant to the issue here, what you think about abortion. Let's just put that aside there for a moment. But to take 6-year-old girls and to show them horrific, gory stuff that would be rated, you know, NC-17 or X or something, if it was on the cinema, shocking images and horror stories, and see those girls break down like a torture victim into hysterical tears and crying, that gets to be child abuse. Right? Maybe with respecting the narrative and even the religious traditions, think of the nastiest people on earth, right? The British colonialists in India, right? When women were, did they choose or not? Did they not choose to jump traditionally, right? The sati, right? To jump into the fire of the father. Should we respect that tradition? Famously, some British officers didn't. If I was a British officer, back then, I would probably try and dodge that, but. Is that saving them? Is that a strong degree of too much acceptance? Is this a violation of universal human rights? That then you do step up. I don't care what the tradition is. It's complicated.
Mm-hmm. But let me pose this. You know, you just finished saying, okay, well, it's horrific images and all that, and I'm going to toss it right back towards film. I mean, aren't we bombarded with images of horrific scenes all the time in movies?
Sure.
They have a purpose, oftentimes.
But it's still the same thing because, you know, I mean, in spite of the ratings, which I'm completely against of, you're still being, you know, subjected to that kind of psychological impact. So, I mean, that would be the argument that I'm sure the Jesus Camp people would present, is that there are certain degrees mm-hmm. of that going on. You know, at the same time, I'm totally with you about the abuse.
Yeah, when she was six to watch you know, 12-hour retrospective of, you know, snuff movies, mm-hmm. then I think that would qualify as child abuse.
Right. But I guess what I'm trying to do is bring it back to the recent situation with the shootings and all that. I mean, all of these images, you know, people have to be a little bit more careful about it because some people will take it one way and other people will take it a different way. It's what you were saying. Who are we to criticize it? You know, but then at the same time, you know, we live in a society that pretty much prides itself on shock value.
Mm-hmm. Right. That's great. Yeah.
Of course, we end with the who decides is always right. That's the problem, right? Who decides?
And to some extent, I think that if you decide, for example, to actively reject those type of values, by choosing perhaps a traditional method of living, mm-hmm. Such as a religious value, I think that frees you to some extent. I mean, you were talking about how this woman actually look at this as a mechanism to basically tell the world, hey, don't mess with me. I'm not the type mm-hmm. of girl that's going to be going out. I'm not
not sexual object.
And you have the right to do
two of my subjects actually take it off.
Mm.
And
yeah.
It's not,
yeah,
it's
that's
not
fascinating.
It's not a pro.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah.
I understand that.
Right.
Tell us about the people who actually went the other way around.
One girl, she was wearing it for 4 years in the university period at the time, and then decided to take it off after meeting with studying with the progressive imam who distinguished mm-hmm. religious teaching or the Quran teaching from a culture. So they, according to him, hijab is a cultural practice, not a religious practice.
Mm-hmm.
So and then she started researched it and then decided he's right.
Mm-hmm.
And another person is she was born in Canada, Bangladeshi background. She's been wearing that for 20 years. And it's because she's in, she's like a Muslim leader in the community. She's a leader, in the community, but she wanted to, reach wider, population. And then she thought If I'm wearing a hijab, people's gonna get scared.
Right, yeah.
Right. Yeah, so I wanted to work for everyone, not for the Muslim communities. And so this, she did, I said, take it off.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Wow,
so, and then now, but now she, yeah, I know, of course she does the research too, and she does believe that, many of the interpretation said that it's not mandatory to cover it. So, but, I mean, after the people research and people study it, that's the beauty of being in this part of the world, not many of the other, more authoritarian, countries. It has to make sense to them.
Yeah.
You know, either way.
Mm-hmm.
So, right. Yeah, that's a great thing. I thought for me that one thing that I wanted to present that it's their choice, their decision after certain their own, process of, judging what's right and what's wrong.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the important, I think.
People don't often compare that to, for example, in Judaism, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, Orthodox women are just as strictly covered. I mean, so there's that weird tradition that evolved some point. I don't know exactly when, actually, probably Enlightenment or 18th century, where you have Orthodox Jewish women wearing wigs instead of. That's, of course, also a sign of wealth, by the way, because wigs, maybe now not so much, but it's a very expensive thing historically, extremely. So that, but they wear, how do you say that? I got a. A moment. How do you cover your hair?
Hijab?
No, just a handkerchief thing.
Just
to cover your hair, because hair also in Christianity, everywhere, hair is the symbol of lust, right? I mean, in Gothic cathedrals, actually, when you see the sins, lust is always a woman with long hair. Mm. Long hair apparently is what got medieval Christians all hot and bothered. that's the symbol of seduction is the long hair, right? So in Judaism too. So of course in America you have Reform Judaism, whatever, and they don't do that. They, like you say, choose to interpret this as being modest. You interpret modesty in the way you want. It doesn't necessarily mean you have to wear a hat. But there's a lot of these traditions. So part of, I think, the singling out of the hijab is part of a general era in which, there's a strong strife with political, economic strife overwhelmingly, with an area that, in the world that, happens to be strongly Muslim. No, people forget about that too. People don't talk often about, Palestinian mixed couples, Christian Muslims, the late Yasser Arafat, where in America you had propaganda about how he persecutes Christians, neglecting to mention that his wife, she's still alive, is Christian.
Is she?
Yeah. So you're right. I mean, you know, they don't talk about that. They don't talk about all these Palestinian Christians that are in line with their brothers and sisters fighting for their independence in Bethlehem. And, you know, who keeps the Holy Sepulchre? You know,
Who are they? Sometimes I feel there are more common kind of understanding each other between religious people of different religion versus like atheist than you know the Muslim and Christians.
Well, hell,
they agree right. on many sure. things, like very religious Christian right. and very religious Muslim. Yeah.
They have such similar concerns, no doubt. And I somebody who I still maintain that I am an atheist. A lot of people then say, no, you're an agnostic. I say, no, I'm just an open-minded atheist. I do atheism right. I'm not sure. I have doubt. I might change my mind and become a deeply religious person. Who knows? But I have to say that there's a tremendous amount of disappointingly knuckleheaded atheists out there.
Yeah, it is.
Oh my God, yeah. Even some people that I mean, yeah. Let's give some hate for Richard Dawkins. I mean, he should have known better.
Well, I was reading about him today in a Bolson Gintis paper, right? Please, yeah. Talking actually about altruism, right? And how altruism, I mean, ultimately we're punk economics, so let's talk eco for a sec.
Yeah, let's
right?
talk eco. Sneak it up.
Yeah, just sneaking it up. Samuel Bowles is a great microeconomist. I believe he's UMass, right? And Sam Bowles. And he does some quite Tetherock's microeconomics, and he's talking about altruism. And he's arguing that altruism actually is economically viable, right? Like, but that he actually disagrees with people like Dawkins in the selfish gene, the line comes up, we are born selfish, and we should teach more altruism, right? I think that is an awful way
and
of
this
looking
is an,
at it.
It's an old tradition, by the way, right? The view of humanity, whether we are born evil and can be refined by society, or the other way around.
Mm-hmm.
What, the Rousseau versus Bacon, I guess.
Rousseau versus Bacon.
I tend to agree more with the second.
I'm
very optimistic, but still, right? I mean,
because
there is an effort. I mean, there are some things. I'm not, I actually think that, you know, his biological work was great. It's now that he feels he's become the crusader for atheism that he's losing his gravitas, as far as I'm concerned.
Richard Dawkins?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think.
Because the selfish gene was just trying to show that the way we reproduce affects the structure of our society. In fact, it was a very influential read for me back in graduate school when I was writing my thesis. Yeah. So, you know, then you read E.O. Wilson and studying ants, and such a brilliant writer too. So if everybody's sisters and one mom and everybody's sisters and the drones after they completed that's males, right? They completed their duty or get kicked out or killed literally. You have a very different social society because you have this really deep communal, it's kind of ideal communism, basically hive in some sense. While in a nucleus family, right, my kids have 50% of my DNA, and therefore I love them more than you guys, who have less.
Yeah.
I'm making a joke of it a little bit.
Many of the adopted kids are loved so much.
Exactly, right? But that's the thing. I mean, this should be, like, that's the kind of scientific, even secular, possibly humility that so many of these knucklehead atheists have forgotten, right? That, yeah, this might be a good concept, a kind of a pure concept, a bedrock case, an extreme case of how much is my DNA playing. But we know people who torture and molest their 50% DNA. So how does that work, Rich? And how about people who love adopted children tremendously? So they are principles. But then there's the complications of reality, right?
Yeah. And with that, we go to our usual public service announcements.
All right,
we'll be right back with Punkonomics here at WPRK Winter Park, Florida, the voice of Rollins College, and the best in basement radio. And a reminder that all opinions stated here are solely ours and not of the WPRK staff or Rollins College staff, employees, volunteers, and whatever. Just remember that we are right.
Yeah. But we're not sure.